Hello and welcome aboard the Battleship Pretension. I am Tyler Smith.
I'm David Bax.
And thank you for listening, David.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm actually very excited.
Very excited. Why is that?
Because I'm going to Toronto, the Toronto International Film Festival for the first time.
It's very exciting.
I found out I got accredited yesterday. I don't know. A part of me feels like I should be like... not overly doing a goal or touchdown celebration here. I should be like, act like you've been there, but I haven't been there and I'm really excited.
Battleship Pretension opening doors, building bridges between us and, you know, our northern friends.
I'll be seeing our friend Jeremy. How many Canadians do we have on the podcast? Jeremy, Nick,
That's quite enough for me.
There's probably some other Canadians who have been on the podcast.
Considering how many
comedians
we've had, it feels like there have probably been a few others.
Yeah, yeah. Just had Canada Day.
Oh, really?
July 1st, Canada Day.
Oh, all right.
All right.
Any particular reason why?
I'm sure there is.
Canadians, feel free to weigh in.
So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to bringing Battleship Pretension that sweet, sweet coverage.
Yeah,
because we've been kind of starved. Because LA Film Fest, and I love LA Film Fest.
Yeah.
Hats off to Film Independent and to our friend Matt Warren, who worked for Film Independent. But they moved the festival to September.
Yeah.
And Sundance isn't doing Next Fest this year, so our summer festival coverage is bone dry. We're like, between TCM and now Toronto, we have no festivals on the site.
I'll see if I can find something. I'll go to
Outfest started today.
All right, let's do it.
All right. Anyway, that's what's going on. Let's pay some bills.
Absolutely. So this episode is brought to you by Mubi, a curated online cinema that brings members a handpicked selection of the best independent, international, and classic films. Every day, Mubi's curators introduce a new title, and you have 30 days to watch it. That means there's always 30 wonderful films to enjoy, all for only $8.99 a month. Plus, when you use their mobile apps, you can download films to watch offline. All right, so rounding out my little recommendation mini-series is Robert Hamer's Kind Hearts and Coronets, which is yet another... Ealing comedy, I believe, starring Alec Guinness in 8 different roles. It's a very pleasant film, but very dark because it involves mass murder. But of course, it's so cheerful. Mm-hmm. And so, look, I don't mean to offend people, but the only way I can describe it is British. It's very British in a lot of ways. But it is it's a lot of fun. And seeing Alec Guinness be silly is a lot of fun. You know, for people our age, we probably saw Alec Guinness first as Obi-Wan Kenobi, not the silliest of characters. Then we probably saw him as Colonel Nicholson. Once again, not that. And then maybe we saw him in, like, the David Lean Dickens adaptations. Mm-hmm. But when you look at these Ealing comedies and you see how silly and goofy and delightful he can be...
Genuine class.
Genuine class, absolutely. And Jeremy's iron. So Kind Hearts and Coronets, it's just one of many Alec Guinness Ealing comedies that are available on Mubi. And then also available as a film I've not seen, but I was excited to see that it was there, so I'm going to try and watch it this weekend, is Jean-Pierre Jeunet's Delicatessen, which I know some people love it, some people do not care for it, but one thing that is sure is it's definitely the movie that really put him on the map.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he had done some stuff before that, but I know that the concept, like, really struck people.
And this is still... Jean-Pierre Jeunet and Mark Caro, right? They made that and City of Lost Children together.
Yes,
right?
I believe so, yes.
And then he broke off?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's worth watching. I'm in the latter camp of not being a big fan of Delicatessen.
Tell you what, I will watch it, and I will let you know if you are right or wrong.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, you're welcome in advance. But anyway, so Kind Hearts and Coronets and Delicatessen are just 2 of the 30 movies available right now over at Mubi, and there's a special offer for listeners of Battleship Pretension. You can try Mubi free for a month. Just go to Mubi.com, that's MUBI.com/battleship to redeem now, or go to BattleshipPretension.com and click on the Mubi ad on the left-hand side of the page.
And I want to tell you about tweakedaudio.com, which is where you go for professional quality earbuds in a variety of stylish styles and colorful colors. They look great. They sound great. Tyler and I use them each and every day of our lives. Today, I was using my tweakedaudio.com earbud to listen to two new tracks from Childish Gambino.
Okay.
I know is... I don't know. I'm so hesitant to be the contrarian because, like, Donald Glover is awesome and obviously he's great in Solo. Atlanta is maybe the best show, close to the best show on TV right now. It's no Glow, but it's up there.
Oh, I haven't watched Glow yet. Damn.
I've never quite gotten on board with the Childish Gambino thing. And so I feel bad saying that because it's like, you know, this is Donald Glover season right now. But I do feel bad saying, like, hey, I listen to his new songs. They're fine, I guess.
I do think I instinctively, and maybe this is shitty of me, but because I think of him as a comedic performer, certainly that's where he came out of, and then like, oh no, he wants to be a musician as well. Well, of course, we've been trained to know that when an actor or a non-musical performer does this, now of course he was doing it at the same time as everything else, immediately I just think like, oh boy, this feels like it's going to be indulgent. Especially it's like, are these songs funny? Oh, they're not, they're very serious. But by all accounts,
I mean, his first stuff when he was like rapping
mm-hmm.
wasn't great, but it had a sense of humor to it. And then honestly, then in the last album, the one that had like, that was in the song that opens Get Out, I forget the name of the album, Redbone and stuff. That one's, I think, really good when he's not rapping. But even This Is America, like everyone likes it. I understand the video is like...
The video, I think, is why people like it so
much. Yeah, I haven't watched it because I don't watch music videos as a rule. But even that, I don't love that much.
We'll come back to that music video
thing. Yeah, let me wrap up the thing. TweakedAudio.com. However I feel about Childish Gambino's music, trust that it sounded great in my TweakedAudio.com earbuds.
Look, here's the thing. If it's going to be... Like, you gave it your best shot because it's not going to sound better than coming through those earbuds. So, like, if you don't like it, it's not because you were listening on bad earbuds. Like, it sounds as good as it's going to sound, and it still is just absolute shit.
Well, these earbuds, which are not absolute shit at all, they're available at a low price at tweakedaudio.com. But if you use the offer code pretension at checkout, you get 1/3 off that low price and no shipping charges. So go to tweakedaudio.com and use the offer code pretension.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Before we get into it, did you want to ask me about the music video thing?
Well,
because I have never said it because I do feel bad about it.
Right. Well, and also I think it's something that I feel like our guest would be interested in chiming in on.
Okay.
In regards to music videos and your lack of them.
Okay. Well, our guest, we have guests sometimes and I say, I'm very excited to have this guy. I'm very excited this person could join me. You know, that's what you say, right?
Yeah. I am. Anytime you talk about Stephen Tobolowsky, you have to fight through a yawn. It's a good thing that this is an audio podcast. Yeah. You're like, oh, Lorraine Newman, I guess, is all right.
Yeah, but no, in all honesty, I am very excited to have this guest on because I have been friends with her. She has been a highlight of Comic-Cons and Sundances for me for years. And because of our rule of not doing Skype or, you know, only doing in-person podcasts, we've never been able to have her on the show, but now she's a full-on Angelino. I won't say too much. A West Hollywoodian. I'm not going to give any specifics as to your location. But from Mashable.com, it's Angie Hahn.
Why don't you like music videos?
Okay, I don't dislike music videos. This is a stupid, stubborn thing with me that goes all the way back to being a kid. And when I say I don't watch music videos, I have seen music videos. I probably haven't watched one. The last one I watched was, I don't know, probably one of those OK Go ones because they're fun, because they do fun stuff or whatever. So as a kid, I didn't grow up with cable. I didn't have cable. So I never saw music videos. I listen to music on the radio. And when it started to dawn on me how much other kids at school associated the songs that I liked with the videos.
Yes.
It rubbed me the wrong way as a kid. I'm like, no, that's not the song. Like, that's like saying you like Kit Kats when you just like Kit Kat commercials, which is not true. Like, because music videos are an art form.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt as a kid, and it has sort of stuck with me. And also, I don't have time. I like to listen to music while I'm doing other stuff. I don't like to sit and watch videos. So,
it's
yes,
nuts.
And I haven't watched This Is America. The one that's really, I think, that I've never come out and admitted to anyone, and even Tyler has beat me to this one, I never watched Lemonade.
I was going to ask.
Yeah, I didn't watch it. I should watch it.
I watched it as a function of a class I was in.
But I hear it's great.
It is. I mean, and This Is America is a really great video as well. But
I also have heard This Is America video is violent and upsetting, and that has kind of turned me off.
Yeah.
Because there was also that, was it an MIA video that was like 7.5 minutes long that was all like redhead kids getting shot? Do you remember that one?
I do not recall that.
It was like, I never watched it, but it was like a racism parable, but it was like instead of racist, it was like everyone turns against redheads, and it was like all these redheaded kids getting shot. I didn't watch it. My wife watched it, said it was very upsetting. I'm probably not ever going to watch that one.
Yeah, my wife's a redhead. I think I'm going to duck out of that one. But it is strange how on board with you I am, like, even as a kid. Now, I did not steer away from music videos, but as a kid, I was just like, why do these exist? Like, music is purely audio. That is how we enjoy it. Why did we decide that this is a thing we want to do?
There's a fascinating history going back way longer than you would think.
Oh, I have no doubt of that.
Yeah, going back to like the 40s.
But I find myself wondering like why that was seen as necessary, and to the point that I remember at the time, that MTV had like the Video Music Awards and then their regular music awards, and that the Video Music Awards were considered a bigger deal because, of course, it was MTV and that's what they did. But it didn't keep me from watching them, but I don't think it probably still is hanging on now. There's a little bit of like, this doesn't feel necessary to me.
Right.
Even though it's many of them are quite beautiful.
Yeah. Angie, what are your thoughts? You like music videos, huh?
I also didn't have cable growing up, so I call BS on that excuse.
But you weren't as bitter a person as I am, apparently.
No, so admittedly, I think maybe one reason why I'm not as, like, you know, purist about music being an audio-only experience is that I'm also just not that into music, which I feel like is a strange thing to say, because
weird.
Everyone is obsessed with music, but me, I guess.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe that's why, but I love watching music videos. Like, the audio, like, having audio is great, but like if I can also watch a little mini movie while it's going on, that's even better.
Someone tells me a video is good, once I know the song well enough, I'll watch it. I just am very resistant to the idea of the song being associated with the video in my head. That bothers me.
Oh, I was gonna say, I mean, I will say that that's definitely a thing. Like, I feel like, especially when I started watching music videos when I finally got cable, which was when I was like in college. And then once I started seeing them together, it does become hard to separate, to the point where if I learn a song by watching a music video, this happens less now, but like when I was younger, if I learned a song by watching a music video and then I just heard the song, it would feel kind of incomplete. So you're not wrong, but I don't know. I enjoy watching people dance and do crazy things.
Yeah,
and I do think that, I mean, when people talk about This Is America, even when they are talking about the song, in my experience, they find themselves talking about the video. Right. Like, the two happened at the same time. They're introduced at the same time. And it is a hell of a video and a perfectly fine song that is definitely elevated. And I have no doubt that there are songs that we talk about now that we wouldn't, and I would say shouldn't, but because the video was interesting in some way.
Can you think of an example?
I can't, unfortunately.
Hmm.
I think it's arguable.
Smack My Bitch Up, maybe?
That's a great example, yeah. Like, I mean, admittedly, the song is, I'm sure there are some people that think it's amazing.
I actually do like that song.
I'm sure you do. But that's the,
I've always liked The Prodigy, or Prodigy.
Well, but would the song be what it is?
No,
if not for that video?
No.
But, like, is it inherently an inferior way to enjoy music if you're also watching something?
I feel like it becomes, it's a different art form.
So you just decided to cut this entire art form out of your life because you didn't have it as a kid.
Which doesn't mean I disapprove of it. It is a personal choice of mine, but I don't disapprove of it. I did when I was younger. I was like stuck up about it, but now in fact, we've actually talked about doing an episode on music videos. We'd have to have someone who knows what they're talking about as a guest. Because
in fact, maybe they should just host the show and we'll leave.
So I'm not. There's no judgment. It is just a personal choice of mine that I don't. As a general rule, I don't watch music videos. I'm not going to be a prig about it. If my wife is like, you should watch this. Sure. Why? I'm not going to be a dick.
Here's an example for me of not a song that's necessarily bad, but me connecting the two so much. And that is Meatloaf's I Would Do Anything for Love.
Never seen the video.
Okay. Perfectly fine song. It's a standard Meatloaf song.
I loved it when I was young.
Yeah, it kind of has a nice rocking quality to it, but still that ballad. Like yeah. I said, standard Meatloaf song. But the video is kind of vaguely Beauty and the Beast themed, like not the Disney one, like where he is in some kind of makeup. He's still undeniably like, it's still him. It's mostly like a forehead type thing. And he's in this old abandoned mansion,
but he's not the dashing handsome Meatloaf we can
exactly, you know, svelte. But anyway, and so, there's nothing in the song about Beauty and the Beast. But if you were to ask me, like, oh, that song by Meatloaf, what's it about? It's like, that's like a Beauty and the Beast. Oh, shit, no, it isn't. It isn't at all. Like, and that song, that video became very associated with the song and was played over and over again, specifically on VH1. And so, yeah, for me, the two, like, the song is, Tainted makes it sound negative, but there's definitely an association with it because of the video.
But do you feel that way when, for example, a pop song is used in a movie?
Sometimes.
Yeah, that's actually an episode we've talked about. I think Josh Long, our friend, friend of the show and friend of your other podcast, really wants to do that episode.
Okay.
We were talking about it at his party. You were there, but you weren't in the conversation.
Yes, yes. You guys specifically said, do not come into this conversation.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's an episode I've always wanted to do. Is songs that I associate with movies, or I think Josh's specific idea was bands or songs you've learned about because they were in movies.
Oh, sure.
Which would be fun. All right, so... Okay, you got more to say? We can just talk.
Sorry,
we have a topic, but none of us cares about it.
Sorry,
so we
about
can
that.
Just talk about whatever we want.
I'm not even going to be there. I can do what I want.
I love spending an entire podcast talking about stuff, about future podcasts you're going to do without me.
You can be there if you want. Somebody needs to talk about this stuff, but I do think that there are songs that I will always associate with movies if they are used very prominently in movies, but I do think it's a little bit different because, like, a video is done where the artist probably has a lot of input into the visual realization of their song, whereas with a movie, like, somebody just bought the rights to the song and then is using it, and then the director is using it however they are. I wouldn't necessarily, for lack of a better term, blame the musical artist for that.
Right. Right.
But anyway, okay, enough of this. I'm sorry. Angie, how you doing?
Yes, let's get to know Angie.
Oh no, okay.
I'm just gonna ask quite the questions I ask everyone, even though at this point I know the answer. Where are you from?
Well, I lived in New York for the past 12 years, so I'm gonna say New York.
Really? That's not where you're from.
I grew up in Southern California, not in LA, but I've lived on the East Coast my entire adult life. I was in New York for 12 years. I'm sorry, you're not going to get me to renounce my New Yorker-iness.
I'm not trying to, but I don't want you to renounce New York, especially because I wouldn't want someone...
This is an unexpectedly contentious question
I feel like you're getting unnecessarily defensive. No, because I wouldn't want someone to deny me, like... calling myself an Angeleno because I've been here 13 years. But if someone says, where are you from? I'm going to say Missouri because that's the answer to the question. So yes, you're from the Southland.
I'm from the suburbs of Southern California. Then I moved to the East Coast and I lived in New York for the past 12 years.
You're treating this like this is some kind of gotcha question. I just wanted to know where you grew up.
According to our files.
Well, if you wanted to know where I grew up, you should have said, Angie, where did you grow up?
Interesting.
Different question.
Maybe that's what I'll say from now on instead of where are you from, even though everyone else seems to know what I mean by it.
It's going to be some tough sledding.
How did you come to be a movie person?
Like,
what is your history with movies? When did you fall in love with movies? Or do you hate movies?
As you were being raised in the five boroughs, at age 0 to present.
Yeah. Walking down to the bodega to get your mom some cigarettes.
Playing stickball with your friends.
Is this what you guys think New York is?
Yeah. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Lots of stickball over there, I guess. Yeah. Yes.
No, in that alley where you can see the Brooklyn Bridge.
Exactly.
From Once Upon a Time in America. That's where every New Yorker grew up, is right. on that alley, right?
All
right.
You're making me regret saying that I was from New York, so mission accomplished. Good job.
Do you like movies?
They're okay. Yeah. They're pretty good sometimes. Sometimes they're pretty bad. I don't know that there was, I don't know, I don't have like a very exciting, dramatic, cinematic story about like the first time I saw a movie and fell in love or something. Right. And when I was growing up, my family didn't watch a lot of movies, so it wasn't a thing. And I think it's probably around college where I started to get really interested in it. But I also remember, like, even before I was actually able to be into movies or like kind of sentient enough to decide that this was a thing I wanted to try to be into, just always being interested and intrigued by pop culture, like just always being like, oh, what is that about? Like, what's going on there? I don't know. It sounds silly to say, but it's one of those things where it never occurred to me that anyone would not be curious or intrigued by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't like music.
Yeah, music was one that I, for a long time when I was growing up, I thought that I was into it because you kind of had to be because everyone was listening to it. And then at some point in adulthood, I was like, you know what? I don't think I care that much about music. I'd still listen to it sometimes. Yeah. I'm not like mad at it, but it's just not my, I guess it's just not something I'm specifically passionate about.
This Mozart's pretty good, but it's no room tone.
Well, let me ask you this, because you write for a living. Do you listen to anything while you write?
I do listen to stuff while I write sometimes, but because I write for a living, I cannot listen to anything that has words in it. Sure. Because I find it extremely distracting if I'm reading or writing, which is like most of my job. So what I end up listening to a lot is movie scores.
Oh, yeah. I like to, if I'm writing a review and the score of the movie that I'm writing the review for is available, I will definitely do that.
Really? I love that.
That's always fun.
That's interesting. I don't think I could do that, partially because some scores work really well mm-hmm. just on their own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just a nice piece. And then there are some where there'll be like this huge sting. It's like, okay, something clearly happened there, but I'm not seeing it right now. So this is just distracting me.
Yeah.
I can kind of tune it out, but there are definitely some scores that, at least in my experience, for me personally, work better as like stuff that I want to listen to while I'm trying to work mm-hmm. versus other ones. Like Mad Max Fury Road, great score, love the music. Can't listen to it while I'm working. There's just too much like, you know, going on, like you said, it's very distracting.
Unless emptying the dishwasher wants to be, you want it to be like really intense.
It's going to be, I'm going to wash this food and it's going to be epic. Yes. Whereas I feel like, you know, if it's something kind of like slow or sad, that's also maybe not good for me for working because I'm, you know, I need something to keep my energy up.
Yeah.
So like, for example, like the Mission Impossible soundtracks, they work great for me. Mm-hmm. The James Bond ones, really like anything that's kind of like that level of kind of exciting and action-y.
Yeah.
Not exclusively those, but those are ones that I turn to quite a bit.
So then, so you grew up and lived most of your life in Southern California, and then you moved to the East Coast, and you became, you slam on the hood of the taxi, and you say, I'm walking here, that sort of thing.
Avoiding that giant ape on the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Now, and you've been out here like a couple months now.
Am I allowed to curse on this podcast?
Oh, yeah. By all means. All
right. I'm from fucking Southern California, okay?
But now that you've moved to this new land of Los Angeles for a couple months, right? Right?
I've been here about 2.5 months, yep.
2.5 months. In that time, how many times have you complained about not being able to find a good slice of pizza? Or a bagel?
I tried to eat a bagel once. It was very disappointing. I don't know that I'll be trying it again until I'll get desperate, but I purposely have mostly avoided pizza. Okay. And it's not that like every slice of pizza you get in New York is good. And I'm gonna be a reasonable person. I know that part of it is that now that I haven't had pizza in New York in a few months, I've like pumped up how good it actually is, and now nothing will live up to it. But yeah, like because of that, I'm like, I can't right now. I can't bring myself to do it yet.
It's not just a New York thing. It's because there are so many people who move to Los Angeles because they have to for the like industry that they're pursuing, that there are always people complaining about how they can't find whatever they liked back home in Los Angeles. And I'm just like, I just want to be like, eat a fucking taco. That's what we're here. Like,
the tacos are good.
Yeah. But also I went to New York and I had tacos there. They were fine. I didn't stomp around. This is the thing about New York and about San Francisco.
Oh boy. Okay.
Angelenos love New York and love San Francisco. They hate us, but it's because they are insecure and they have chips on their shoulders. And
I'm from fucking New York again. How dare you?
Secretly jealous that we live out here where it's fucking nice all the time.
I have not encountered that with New Yorkers. San Francisco, I have seen, yes. But I've not.
No, it's secret jealousy. That's what it
is. Okay, I don't know if it's.
Because if. We don't have any problem. Angelenos are happy all the time about like, oh yeah, we love going there. I never hear Angelenos talk shit about New York or San Francisco.
Because New York is better. New York, it is true that New Yorkers, I don't think, tend to like LA very much. You hear a lot of like, it's not a real city because it's not a city in the sense that we're used to New York being a city. LA is a lot more spread out. It feels more suburban in comparison and things like that. So you hear that a lot. And I do remember like, you know, being a person from California who was living in New York, and there would be a lot of like, people are like, where did you grow up? Not where you're from, because that's a dumb question. Where did you grow up? And then I'd be like, I'd say I'm from California, and they'd say, oh, where?
And I right? Hey, like that. Oh, go Mets.
This is actually offensive to New Yorkers. But yeah, when I tell people I'm from LA a lot, like I remember, especially when I first moved to New York, a lot of people being like, oh yeah, I don't like LA. And like some of the people said that would be like, you know, I've never been there. I just don't think I'd like it. And I'd be like, well, fuck off.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Los Angeles is not a city the way that New York or Chicago is. Because it's not constantly announcing to you that it's a city. Los Angeles doesn't care what you think of it. Los Angeles is hard to love, and that makes it more worth loving once
you
fall
in love with it. The city of Hollywood and movie stars and actors doesn't care what you think of it.
Yeah, that's an outsider's point of view. Mm-hmm. That is a small. Most of us, I mean, I do, but most of us Angelenos don't work in the entertainment industry.
New Yorkers famously don't care about anything. Have you ever seen like someone on the subway doing something crazy, and then everyone else is pretending like they can't see it? That's the best thing about New York.
That happens here too, because you know what? We also use the subway. That's another annoying. This is coming up on almost consecutive episodes. We talked about it a couple weeks ago with Camille. Annoying stereotype is that Angelenos don't take public transit. Our buses and trains are always fucking full. It's crazy how full they are. We're building new train lines all the time. People take public transit here. As someone who does regularly, it annoys me that that's a stereotype.
Is the city of LA one of your sponsors?
No, but it's a place that I love.
Board of Tourism.
And it's a place. Yeah, if you ask me where I'm from, I'm going to say, what's the stereotype? I'm going to say like the Valley, right?
Yeah, sure.
That's the version of.
So here's what I say, having lived a number of places at this point. Every place is great and terrible.
Yeah.
All right. Every place, with the exception of where I am from, which is Taft, California, which has nothing going for it, really at all.
I think you get out of a place when you put into it. And Los Angeles, maybe because of the spread out thing, and also honestly because I've never lived in New York, but having lived in Chicago, Los Angeles is a difficult place to be broke. I've been broke in both in both Los Angeles and Chicago, and it sucks being broke here. But you do have to put a lot into Los Angeles to learn to like it, because Los Angeles does not reach out and tell you that the city accepts you. Whereas a city full of pedestrians like New York or Chicago, as soon as you step off the plane or whatever, you're swept up in the current of the city.
Mm-hmm. Like in Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah. Whereas Los Angeles is hard to find. You have to tap it like an aquifer.
Is this like when someone calls something an acquired taste, but it's because it's actually shitty?
No, because most things that are an acquired taste are worth acquiring. Whiskey, cigarettes.
I like those right away.
Did you?
Yeah.
I threw up the first time I smoked.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I was in eighth grade, like that movie you guys saw. I didn't see the movie yet. Does she smoke a cigarette and puke in the woods?
No,
I don't think so.
Okay, yeah. I remember the first time my dad let me try a sip of his beer. I was like, what? Why are you and all my uncles so nuts about this stuff? This tastes awful. And then you grow to acquire a taste for it, right?
I'm or sorry. I'm just being... I'm
or
just
a desperate need for it.
Yeah.
I'm just being cranky because I'm new here, and you're making me renounce my...
You mean you're new here to Los Angeles, where you had never stepped
foot before? You miss your place of birth, which is Long Island, of course.
Yeah. You and Fran Drescher.
Okay, technically, I was born in New Jersey,
great... You should have said that to begin with.
Oh, my God. Next time I come here, I will come armed with like a long list of every address I've ever lived at, sure, like your an apartment I'm trying to rent.
Yeah, I'm gonna need like gas bills,
references.
New Jersey. See, now I've never been in New Jersey.
I don't think you need to.
I don't know. It seems like a cool place. It's a Garden State.
Yep. It
seems like a beautiful place, right?
Sure.
I'm sure it's just full of gardens.
And pine barrens.
Sure.
Just like how the Big Apple is full of apples.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Well, California is the Golden State, and it was full of gold.
That's true.
Right?
Not full. A lot of people did not successfully get a lot of gold out of the gold rush, so full is a stretch.
All right.
Fair enough.
Also, that was Northern California.
Maybe there's an untapped...
you know what I say?
Underneath the Hollywood sign.
Everything coming out of Hollywood, pure gold.
All right, so that's enough contentiously getting to know Angie, or telling Angie who she is.
Angie, I feel like I should apologize on behalf of David. I was fine, but on behalf of
you
David,
were a gentleman.
I'm so sorry that you were treated poorly. Your first time being on Battleship Pretension.
Thank you. This is what I've been putting up with for all these years.
Okay, let me tell you one of the first things that Angie ever said to me. Okay? We had met, I think, through Ryan Gallagher of the Criterion Cast. I think you knew him first, right? And we met at Comic-Con. And it was the final night of Comic-Con. And it was the first time I was really... Like, I'd met you earlier in the con, but I was like... the first time I was actually having a conversation with you, in the middle of the conversation, because at this point it's like 11 o'clock at night, you looked down and you said, "You're still wearing your badge, you fucking dork." So I feel like you maybe set the tone for our friendship.
And then you not only chose to stay friends with me, but called me a highlight of your Comic Cons and Sundances. So what does that say about you?
That I like a challenge, I guess. All right. Speaking of Comic-Con, how about that?
Oh!
We got there.
Well done.
Eventually.
Let's get into it, shall we?
Indeed.
We're talking about this year's, the 2018 Comic-Con. This will be my 13th Comic-Con, although it's the first time since 2008 that I won't be there the entire time. I'm a little bit less excited than I used to be. If you had told me back in 2008, 2009 that there would ever be a time that I would be like... It would be a week before Comic-Con, I'd be like, oh, right, I guess I'm doing that. Because I wouldn't have believed you, because there was a time in the early 2010s where, like, starting in early June, I was like, it's fucking Comic-Con season. I can't wait. I used to love it so much. I still have a fun time there, but I'm a little skeptical about how this year's going to go.
Angie, your thoughts. Why does David hate Comic-Con?
No, what are your thoughts on how has your relationship to Comic-Con changed?
How is my relationship? Well, this year will be my eighth year going as press, and then there was like 1 year, a few years before that I went for fun. The first time I went, it was overwhelming. The second time I went, I started to like it more because I knew what I was doing. I think you're right that this year I'm not as excited. I think part of that is Comic-Con itself, and part of that is that now that I'm not traveling from New York to here, the trip itself is just not as big of a deal.
Yeah.
And
what are you looking, is there anything you're looking forward to seeing at Comic-Con this year? Because in terms of panels, we've got no Disney, which isn't a surprise because Disney doesn't really go anymore, I guess.
They go, like last year they went to last year Marvel was there. Yeah, and no, the year I, before like Star
about,
Wars I mean, was there.
Not Marvel, I'm talking about Disney.
Oh, okay.
That's like, been like a Disney panel since they had like the James Franco Oz movie, which I've forgotten the name of.
Oz the Great and Powerful.
There might have been one after that, but I would, like there hasn't been a Disney panel in forever. Because they have D23 or whatever, and they like control their own stuff. But Marvel, as a separate thing, also isn't going this year in terms of Hall H. There's actually a lot of Marvel panels this year related to the movies because it's a 10-year anniversary of Iron Man. So they're having a lot of small panels looking back at the 10 years. But yeah, it does seem like in terms of events, some of the mainstays aren't there.
Yeah, I mean, like, Marvel's always... It's such a, like, a boring answer. But they really are always, like, one of the highlights of Comic-Con. Like, they always know how to put on a good show. Like, even if you don't think you're that excited, like, they know how to get you excited. Yeah. And it's always been... And they generally have, I think, what is the Saturday night slot in Hall H. So it's always, like, a really good time that I always look forward to. And this year, they're not there. So it does seem a little bit different. Like I was looking at the schedule, and I feel like there was a time when you could just expect that like every major studio that had like one of those big blockbusters coming out, like that all of them would be there. And it seems like that time has passed. I know everyone's been saying like, "Oh, Comic-Con is over for a few years," but this was the first year that I looked at the schedule. And I'm like, yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah, I mean, you've got.
I mean, not like over. I'm sure there'll still be like fun stuff to do and fun stuff to see and whatnot. But it does. You do see like this is the first year I've been like, yes, this is like a market kind of. Down,
but maybe that's a good thing.
That's what I was
it's not necessarily a bad thing.
It could make it more fun. But yeah, the big thing. I mean, Warner Brothers will be there Saturday morning, like they always are in Hall H. So I'm sure they'll have I don't know Aquaman stuff or whatever have coming out. That'll be exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, you've got like in terms of movies, like Hall H has been so taken over by TV at this point. You've got like Better Call Saul and Doctor Who.
I am excited for Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. It also seems like there's more video games at Comic-Con this year. Have you guys also noticed that, or is it just me?
No, I don't think I kind of, when I went to look at the schedule, I kind of just like clicked movie. Like I only looked at the movie stuff.
Oh, I looked at the whole schedule. I don't cover video games or really know that much about them, but that was just something that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just didn't really notice it before or something like that. But when I was looking at it, I was like, it seems like there's like movies are a little bit less. TV is maybe the same or a little bit less, but there seems to be more games than usual. Maybe? I don't know.
I have nothing to say about that.
If that's true, I'm not surprised. Like, I mean, it's something that I checked out on video games a very long time ago with my Super Nintendo.
I didn't even get that far.
Yeah, you're not missing much.
That's not true. I had an Xbox.
Oh.
That my ex-girlfriend bought. I think I still have it, unless I have thought to clean out my closet and throw it away because it doesn't work anymore. But I had an Xbox specifically. My girlfriend bought an Xbox. My ex-girlfriend bought an Xbox specifically to play Dance Dance Revolution, which I then became obsessed with to the point where, I don't know if you guys ever played Dance Dance Revolution, if you dance long enough, the game will say, like, hey, you need to take a break. Like, this might be bad for your health. You're probably, like,
oh, your it's heart like, rate is, it's like when you're binging something on Netflix and it's like, are you still watching?
Yeah. Would you like us to call 911? Yeah, it's a standard thing that has been said the last several years is just how much the video game industry outsells movies by a wide, wide margin. Mm-hmm. And because games have become so, one could say, cinematic, that it stands to reason that, you know, if Comic-Con started with comic books and then you've got movies and TV, and I would say the next big thing, it's not like video games are new, but I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
In terms of Hall H, it could be interesting because we've seen, you know, it used to be maybe 7 years ago or so, there was almost no TV in Hall H.
Mm-hmm.
Hall H wasn't even open on Sundays, which now Sundays is all TV in Hall H. Mm. But like things like Game of Thrones were in Ballroom 20, which is the next biggest room. And now we've seen, like, if you look at the Hall H schedule, which I have pulled up, it's more TV than movies at this point. So do you think at a certain point video games will be in Hall H? I think what we'll need to answer my own question is I think we need to get to a point where there's more name talent in terms of voice acting in video games for them to have something to show, to some people to bring.
Yeah. Know?
But I can see that happening, right?
Yeah, you need to, because that's, I mean, I guess it makes sense that it wasn't that long ago that actors from movies started getting into TV. And I remember my friends and I was like, oh, like,
yeah. Oh, Glenn Close. Damages. Yeah. That's a,
like, it stopped being a thing like, oh boy, I thought they were doing better than this.
Right.
You know, it became a thing where like, oh wait, Alec Baldwin is now not merely on like Saturday Night Live, but he is now the lead of a TV show with 30 Rock. Like, okay, I guess this is a thing that happens now.
I think Tina Fey is the lead of 30 Rock.
They're co-leads. But the point is, like, he started, I would say he's more notable.
More famous.
Yeah, so it was a bigger deal.
Jack Donaghy is the lead.
A co-lead. I think it's I think you have two leads.
It's a two-hander?
Yeah, and I think everybody else is
I think if you can only name one lead, I would say it's Tina Fey, but I can see there are, like, there's a lot of shows like that. Like Mad Men, for example, everyone's like Jon Hamm's the lead, but you could make a really good argument for Elizabeth Moss being the lead as well.
Yeah.
And yet if you had to pick like one image to represent like what is this show? I'm going to, a photo of one character to like represent the entire show, it would probably be Jon Hamm.
Yeah, and I
not on like a philosophical sense, just in like a branding sense.
Yeah,
and I think so much. Yes, I mean Liz Lemon and Jack Donaghy both have their separate stories, but a big part of that show was their friendship and the fact that it never actually became a romantic thing, and that they saw themselves as equals. And so, yeah, I definitely think that they are co-leads. Certainly, the Emmys. Agree, since he like won lead actor over and over again, but
that
it
doesn't mean anything.
It not necessarily, but it is definitely. And I think the Emmys were very excited to have a real life movie star that they could reward over and over again. And so I do think that it was a big deal when movie stars started moving to television, and now I think you'll probably get movies and TV stars. Like a lot of them, like really notable ones doing video games. And there already are a good number of them. But yeah, like when it comes to panels, Hall H panels specifically, people want to see stars. And once video games get that big, that's, I think, when you will start to see them. I don't know if it would ever like overrun Hall H, but I guess if TV does now, then, you know. But TV's not going away anytime soon.
That's what I hear.
You know. Like it's don't let I know it seems like a passing fad. Yeah. So
I guess Game of Thrones is the other big Hall H staple that's not gonna be there because scheduling.
Yeah, they're not, haven't even started shooting the next season, right?
Or have, no, they have.
They have?
Yeah, I know Emilia Clarke and Maisie Williams just wrapped shooting and they posted about it on Instagram and everything, so they have finished shooting, but it's not coming out till next year, so.
Yeah, I assumed because it's not coming out for like over a year or maybe a year.
Is Westworld gonna be there?
Yeah, like, I think so.
Okay,
let me check. I could have sworn I saw
this. Don't know.
Oh no, you know what? No, they're not.
I don't think so. Because they also not. Just finished airing.
Because I think HBO said they're not bringing anything because there's no Silicon Valley this year.
Yeah.
What else would they have that they have brought before? I'm trying to think. Oh well.
Those are the big ones I can think of. So let's last year when we did our Comic-Con preview episode, it wound up being kind of larger than just what's going to be at this Comic-Con. And so I was curious, like, Angie, what do you like about Comic-Con? Like what, I mean, obviously there's the, you have to go. What was it? Oh, David is pointing at himself. Okay. I see. I mean, that's why I would go every year, 'cause I don't see him enough here. But yeah, like obviously you would have to go for professional reasons, but what do you most enjoy about Comic-Con? How has it changed for you over time?
Well, David's not wrong. You are one of my favorite things about Comic-Con. And like just
Thank
in
you.
General,
Same.
One of the oh, well, one of my I mean, but just generally speaking, one of my favorite things is getting to see like those people that I only ever see at Comic-Con, and there's a lot of them, like, you know, other people who are in my industry but work in other cities that I only get to see once or twice a year. I'm always like thrilled to see them, and I feel like that's a boring answer because it just makes it sound like it's, I don't know, summer camp or something.
I almost didn't go this year. Like, Tyler's not going this year, and one of the main reasons I was like, I can't do this is because of friends, like we mentioned Ryan before, who lives in Portland, my friend Kate Kolzik, who lives in Chicago. Like, these are people that I see every year, and
Moises occasionally shows up.
I could go with that. I could go a year without seeing Moises.
I enjoy him.
I obviously do too. I'm saying that
small
as a joke. But that was one of the main reasons that I was like, all right, I'm at least going to go for a few days so I can see my friends.
Yeah, and so I mean, like, just the kind of, like, there is like so much exciting energy in being around large crowds of people who are really excited. Like, I was just talking about Marvel and how they managed to get me really hyped every year in spite of myself. I'll be like, oh, I don't care about the movies they're bringing this year, like, whatever. But when you're in the room and everyone's like getting so pumped and they're just like drumming it up, like, you get like very like emotional. So like that stuff like that is always kind of like, you know, you don't get that everywhere. I enjoy stuff like that too.
I remember the year that the Warner Brothers announced that they were doing Batman versus Superman. And I think at that point I hadn't even watched Man of Steel, which had come out earlier in the year, I think. That was 2013, right? And they announced it, and I was like, wow. I was like standing up with everyone else, like, this is awesome. And I was like, I don't care.
That's one of the fun things about it. There's just so much like hype and energy and just like excitement and like people who are really excited and passionate and like happy about things. And that's like, that itself is fun. It can be kind of overwhelming, which is one of the reasons I didn't have a good time the first time I went. It's just like so much to take in. And you know, as we all know, not all fandoms are good all the time.
Yeah.
But like, just generally speaking, you're around a bunch of people who are like very, very excited and very, very happy about this thing. And yeah, you get swept up in it. I like that.
Yeah. I think you've talked about the sort of, you, Tyler, have talked about the sort of sense of, community or whatever, like, and we were talking about off mic before we started recording. We were talking about middle school because you guys had seen eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And I talked about it not being until high school that I found the drama club and my fellow weirdos. And I don't really hang out with those types of like drama club type people anymore. I know a few actor types. But that's kind of what Comic-Con feels like to me. It's like, I don't know you. When this weekend's over, I'm not going to talk to any of you, except for the people that I talk to online. But I mean, like, not the people that I'm in line with or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's fun. It's like finding your tribe for a few days.
Yeah, and this is definitely a thing that I've talked about before, even though I myself didn't witness it, but other people talked about it, that, I mean, for God's sake, it's a place where people were perfectly okay with you know, My Little Pony, but then when Twilight showed up, this is, again, many years ago, and people were like, hey, wait, that's not Comic-Con. It's like, everything is Comic-Con, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw a guy, this was many years ago, walking around, it's Charlie Chaplin. That's not super Comic-Con, except that it is. It's an excuse to indulge your nerdy sensibilities, specifically in an artistic, you know, it's, if you're a nerd about sports, that probably is not the place for you, but there's
probably still find a booth with
no question about
trading cards and sports figurines. Absolutely,
if it's something that a lot of people are excited about, it's Comic-Con.
And so, and that is something that I really enjoyed, and I do like that it's, I can't tell you how tired I get of people. If I hear the word mom's basement one more time, I know it's a term, not a word, but it's just, what was I was watching something the other day where someone was making a large, just a sweeping generalization about guys who, I love Conan O'Brien. I think he's delightful. I think he has a sensibility I really enjoy, but he, when he's talking to nerds, and he does a thing called Clueless Gamer, and he will play video games with his IT guy who knows everything about all of these games, and the way that Conan O'Brien insults him often is very amusing, but he will often go to that nerd well, and I kind of want to be like, yeah, these types of jokes have an expiration date, and I think it's past them.
Yeah,
I don't think you can talk about, like,
Conan,
somebody.
If Conan's IT guy is living in his mom's basement, Conan needs to start paying his IT guy.
Yeah,
for
yeah. I don't think it's I don't think he necessarily says that, but it's something that always bothered me that, like, oh, if somebody's really into movies or really into comic books or really into video games, like, they don't have a life. And it's like, well, no, this is... They probably have a number of friends, they probably have a job, and this is their hobby like everybody else has. Yeah. I remember years ago, we had the Sklar brothers on, and they're like big sports guys, and they said, yeah, ours, like, how can people who pore over sports statistics judge anybody for their hobby and their weird obsessions? And so I like that Comic-Con, it brings in male and female of various... ages, various races, and it's very exciting. So I do apologize for the dinging that's happening outside. It's summertime, which means that this neighborhood's version of the ice cream man, which is literally it's a Sunday truck, just drives along, and rather than have delightful music, it just rings this bell just often enough to drive you fucking insane.
It's like 10 o'clock at night. Who's going outside and eating ice cream?
Probably the same people that choose to work on their car about 11 p.m.
All right. Two things. One, you obviously just haven't lived in Los Angeles long enough. It's always ice cream truck time. Yeah,
exactly. I know in New York, it's the city that always goes to bed early, but, you know.
But, no, but Tyler, for you, I'm going to say, I love you, man, but... Just move to the country if you're gonna complain about your neighbors being noisy. You shouldn't live in the city.
Noisy. Here's the thing. I feel like there's natural noise that comes with being in the city, but when somebody decides to, and you know what, if somebody's working on their car, like on their property, I'm even a bit more forgiving of that. But like, I have my car parked on the street. It's 11:30 p.m. Time to break out the hammer and start just banging away. And it's just one of those things, like, and cities do have sound ordinances, and also you're on the public street, and it's one of the 7 or 8 cars that you have that's on the street.
So this is about one specific neighbor.
I hate this person so much. Yeah. Ugh, stupid hat.
Maybe he'll go to Comic-Con and find his tribe there of people who like to work on cars at 11 p.m.
Absolutely. It's not my place to judge him there. If he goes to Comic-Con, we are brothers in arms. Here, he can go straight to hell. I'm sorry.
Yes. On a less like kind of profound level, one of my other favorite things about Comic-Con is like seeing people who are like cosplaying doing really mundane things. Uh-huh. Like one of my favorite memories is like sitting in like a hotel couch, and it was like 3 a.m. and I was like waiting for a cab to like go to the airport or whatever. And there was just like Thor and Captain America sitting and like texting. And I was like, That's funny. Yeah. My favorite thing is that this is not from San Diego Comic-Con, but it was when I went to New York Comic-Con once, and I was like on the Comic-Con floor, and there was a guy dressed up as the Joker talking on the phone, and it sounded like he was like getting dumped by his girlfriend. Oh, no. So he was like, he's like dressed up in full costume, and he's like having a very emotional conversation on the phone about, and like, I'm really sorry to laugh at this guy's pain, and if you're listening, I'm so sorry. But also it was just like, well, this is surreal. This is one of those only at Comic-Con moments.
Yeah.
And it's definitely one of those moments where the character he's dressed up as would not be responding this way. Like, if the Joker was
so
broken
good
up
about
with
it. Yeah.
He'd just be like, oh, no, that's, well, time to move on and murder someone.
Yeah. You see so many, like, superheroes and, like, you know, hobbits and Khaleesi's and whatever, just, like, texting, standing in line for, like, nachos. It's great. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, just standing in line, period, is funny when it's
Deadpool. Yeah, you're just like, you're like, it's like Wonder Woman, and she's just like standing in line for Starbucks. Yeah. And you're just like, aw, the superheroes are just like us.
I remember my first Comic-Con seeing a guy in a really great Predator costume. The guy looked like he was 8 foot tall, and he was just walking over to McCormick & Schmick's. Apparently had dinner reservations, maybe some seafood or something. And it was, I was like, I'm coming back.
See, isn't that great?
Yeah, it really is.
All right, what else is going on at this year's Comic-Con?
Yeah, sorry.
Now, Tyler, you aren't going.
I'm not.
But you didn't have a badge this year anyway, because you didn't bother to apply for one, right?
Yeah, I kind of forgot, partially because there was the potential that I was going to be on a panel, and then in the end it wound up not mattering because I have to work. But
there's lots and lots of stuff to do if you're not at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I don't know. I imagine, Angie, that because you have to cover stuff, you don't get to go to a lot of the activations, the offsite stuff. Is that right?
It depends. Like, I have gone and can go to some of them, and some of them, you know, if it's tied into a big property that we're covering for work or something, sometimes it's worth it to go sure. check it out. Yeah.
But that's become a big part of Comic-Con, because yes. my wife is coming down with me. She doesn't have a badge. She's like, oh, I'll just hang out. And I'm like, there's so much stuff that you can yeah. do. Although now it's going to be, I don't know if you know, it's going to be more difficult this year, because this year you can't even go up to the convention center without your badge. Mm. So if you wanted to get over to like where the Adult Swim stuff is, whatever, you have to take the pedestrian bridge over by the Bayfront Hilton, because now that whole part where the shuttles normally drop yeah. off is going to be all walkway. They're closing Harbor Boulevard, and the shuttles are going to drop you off if you're coming from Hotel Circle or whatever on Harbor Boulevard. Then you have to walk up to the convention center. Hmm. I don't know if it's a security reason or what, but it's going to be great for leaving the convention center after Hall H, because when everyone comes out of Hall H and is trying to cram on yeah. the 4 feet of sidewalk, and yeah. there's all this empty area where the shuttles are, and security guys being like, don't walk on the, which I would as much as I could get away with.
No.
Because I love Comic-Con, but any chance I can get to ignore the security people, I will, because, and I don't even think I don't think any individual security person at Comic-Con is bad at their job. I think it's very poorly organized.
Mm-hmm. It's shockingly poorly organized. Yeah. Every year they're like, this year we're doing the Hall H line different, and it's going to go great. And every year everyone's very confused, and it's yeah. not better. It's
yeah, just, by everyone, it's you just mean like the people running the way. Line are confused.
The people running the line are confused. The people who, like, I've had to stand in that line, and like, there's a lot of years where we've been like, wait, so what's happening this year? We have to wait in line for wristbands, but it's a different line that you have to get into later to like get into the thing, and it's all and they claim like it's gonna go smoothly, this yeah. is to like help you guys, and we're like, it's no.
Yeah, you ask three different security people at Comic-Con the same question, you will get three different mm-hmm. answers. I remember you and I, Angie, we had the same first Sundance. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this at Sundance, like, I can't believe how well-informed and helpful these volunteers are. Sundance volunteers are the best.
I mean, I will, like, in their defense, like, the Comic-Con, like, the people helping out, like, I do not think it is their fault. They all seem like they're trying their hardest. They're, yeah, you know, no trying to corral, like, thousands of nerds and get them out of the street so that they don't get hit by cars. And then people like you walk, you know, where the cars are anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm very sympathetic to them. But yes, it's just, you would think for a convention that's that big, that's been going on that long, it would just be better organized in general.
So a couple years ago, I went to a thing called Desert Trip in Palm Springs.
Also known as Old Cella, I think.
Also known as Old Cella. It was two weekends, but it was the same performers both weekends. It was Bob Dylan, Rolling Stones, Neil Young, Paul McCartney, The Who, and Roger Waters. So, I mean, it was a pretty amazing few days. And there were 80,000 people there. And so I went with my wife and her brother, and we were among the younger people there. And we, like, the bathrooms they had were amazing, and just the restaurant options. And we were just like, wow, this place is really well organized. And that's when, and I was at the one of the merch booths, and there was a guy who, like, yes, he had a ponytail, but it was gray hair pulled into a ponytail, like, and he was speaking in a way that suggested, oh yeah, you're not the young hippie anymore. You probably have had your, like, you're probably a businessman at this point. And like, he was upset, and he was using the word ridiculous, you know, as middle-aged white people do.
Yeah, that is a suburban parent,
right?
Complaining at Foot Locker word.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, and he was frustrated that the line was taking so long. And I was just like, I'll bet were this actually like Coachella or something like that, everyone's just happy to be there. So, like, hey, is the line taking a while? Well, hey, what are you going to do? But
snap some more pics for the gram. That's what you're going to do.
I don't. Oh, yes. Got it. I was like, are you speaking English? I can't tell. But that's the thing is, like, this crowd, they're older. They're paying a lot more. They will make a scene if things don't go their way. And so it's like, okay, we need to step this up. We need to make sure these bathrooms are very good and air conditioned. And along those lines, I would say that, yeah, I'm not surprised Sundance is very well organized, because you have just a ton of industry people who, if things don't go their way, oh, it's ridiculous. And you will hear, the manager will hear of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
good
as
point.
Opposed to Comic-Con, I think everyone's just happy to be there and they're not going to put up a stink. They'll be like, no, this is probably my fault. If you don't know where I'm supposed to go.
So what I'm hearing is if, I want to have a good Comic-Con experience next year, I should spend a lot of this year saying the word ridiculous at people. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll work on
this
that.
This is ridiculous. sir, you're acting ridiculous right now. Okay, you have to say it like that. So, why are you working on your car so late? This is ridiculous.
That's who you become.
Well, first off, I've always been this.
That's true. That's true.
Ever since I was a kid, it's like, can we all just be quiet, please?
I was going to say something about Comic-Con. Oh, yeah, so Comic-Con. The people attending, I think they will put up with a lot. It's almost counterintuitive. It's so hard to get to Comic-Con. And I think sometimes we take it for granted because we don't have to pay for our passes or whatever. But it's so, so hard to get to Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. It's so expensive that on the one hand, you'd think, well, they should be demanding the absolute best because they've spent half of their yearly income just to get here and buy a gigantic Lego, you know, Infinity Gauntlet or whatever for $700 or whatever. But it's almost the opposite. It's like they went through the hell of getting here and they're just happy to be it. Like you said,
no
they're
question.
Just happy to be there.
Yeah.
Because they know they're one of the lucky, they're one of the 6% of people.
Yeah.
People, if you are buying Comic-Con badges on, like as a normal attendee, you have like a 6% chance of all the people trying to actually get a badge.
And there are 150,000 people at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So that's 6%. I mean, I there's press and industry stuff, but like, yeah, it's insane how many people want to go. And so if you actually make it there, you will do anything. It's like,
yeah.
Do you have literal hoops you want me to jump through? I'll do it. It's no problem.
Yeah. All right. Well, did we cover Comic-Con, you guys?
I think so.
Is there anything else we're looking forward to this year? I feel like I'm having trouble looking forward to stuff. There's because even a lot of it is, you know, Marvel's not there. I don't really keep up with the DC movies except for Wonder Woman. I like that one. But then even like the other studios, like Fox is bringing the Predator, which I don't really care that much about.
It's Shane Black. I mean, he's writing and directing, and I assume I would hope he would be on the panel, which means it would probably be kind of entertaining.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, he is an entertaining guy. I saw him at a panel at Pitchfest here in Los Angeles, which is for aspiring screenwriters, which you probably also have a 6% or lower chance of getting it.
Sure.
Here in Los Angeles. But it was right after Iron Man 3 came out and he did a panel and I would say delightfully not humble about how successful Iron Man 3 was.
Yeah.
He's very Shane Blackish about it.
Yeah.
You know, or someone who's introduced as being the director of the number one film in the country. And he was like, the world. But yeah, I guess I don't care for sequels to movies if I haven't seen all of them.
Sure.
And the only Predator movie I've ever seen is Predator. I never saw Predator 2, never saw Predators, and I never saw either AVP movie.
That's Alien versus Predator.
Yeah, and Alien versus Predator Requiem.
Yes, yes.
Those are the two movies.
Requiem seems like such a, it's an Alien versus Predator movie. What are you doing? Yes, no, I know what you mean.
So yeah, even that, and then like Sony has a panel, but they haven't announced what they're bringing.
I'm guessing Spider-Man.
I was going to say, you probably know.
Well, yeah, I don't know offhand, but I would guess that the animated Spider-Man movie will be there, and that looks really good.
That's what I hear.
So
Venom? Venom is...
Venom will probably be there.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, that too.
Okay. Yeah, it's... I mean, I do know that something for myself in the past, some of my favorite things in Comic-Con have been when I arrive early for a panel I want to go to. And I wind up just is like, oh, this panel is kind of fun. I never would have gone to it otherwise, but boy, everyone here sure seems excited. That's fun. Or just like something that looks, I'm, let's stick with 6%. I'm 6% interested, but it's what's happening right now and I can get into it. And it winds up being a really fun, like, oddly academic discussion. And those are usually, I think I've found that, yes, like seeing celebrities are fun, but for the most part, I think I like the more academic things.
Yeah. If I didn't have to go to Comic-Con for work, like that's right. exactly the kind of like I end up because I go for work, I end up doing a lot of like Hall H and like Barroom 20 and stuff like that. But if it were like if I were just picking for myself, I would end up going to all of the academic ones, the ones that sound like they're like college courses or whatever. Yeah. Like that would be my jam.
I went to the most contentious panel I've ever been into. Not just on the panel, but between the panel and the audience.
Oh, wow.
Was a panel about the price of digital comics.
Oh,
and it was I remember I was waiting for the panel for the web series Husbands. I remember that Jane Espenson created, and it was just happened to be before, and I was like, holy shit, people are up in arms about how much online like digital comics cost.
That was a whole panel.
Yeah
wow. Well, so
they didn't just like throw out a number and like, anyway, panel over, bye everyone.
Yeah. $5, what do we think?
No, you don't ask them what they think. You're just like, it's $5. Okay, yeah, there we see go. You next con.
Yeah, you guys are not going to impact this at all. But yeah, there was one that I went to, and it was one of the best things ever. And it wasn't, I guess you could say it was academic, but it wasn't even really that. It was, there's a... this person who's a therapist, and then there was another person who was a teacher, and they were talking about incorporating comics into dealing with troubled children and using comics, both heroes and villains, to so the kids had something they could relate to, because many of them had, you know, some kind of mental problem that made them feel so different than everybody else, and often meant that they had extreme reactions to things that made them feel particularly different. But then they look at you know, Batman, who has extreme reactions to things, and they say like that makes sense to me. Or and a number of them would look at like somebody like Magneto and say, everything he's saying sounds spot on to me. This guy's the villain. But that wouldn't make them feel bad. Frankly, they were just happy that someone somewhere knew what they were feeling. And it was so touching in a way. And it's the kind of thing that, to go back to what I was complaining about earlier, when people talk about like, oh, comic book nerds or movie nerds or whatever, and just and downplaying that, like, oh, this can't, you don't have a life. And it's like, well, look at what these things can do for people. It can actually give them life or some kind of sense of community. And that panel was so, of course, I mean, it wasn't full at all. There were like maybe 35, 40 people in the audience, and that was maybe like a third full. But it was a shame, because to me, again, I'm getting lofty now, like, that is so much more the spirit of Comic-Con than, hey, look at all these celebrities. And I recognize, of course, it's all Comic-Con, but that to me is why Comic-Con is special for me, is the acknowledgement that this runs deeper than just, hey, pop culture and we all like it. But that's me being, once again, kind of lofty.
I like it.
Yeah.
What else? I'm trying to figure out if they're doing, because you're mentioning smaller panels. One of my favorite smaller movie panels every year is the Bold Voices of Contemporary Horror.
Oh, panel. Who do they got?
And I'm trying to figure out if they're doing one this year, because I don't remember seeing it, but I did go through the schedule kind of quickly because I'm not going to be there that long this year. So I'm not sure if they're doing one this year, but that's always a fun time. But I was thinking about it when I was talking about panels that have gotten contentious, because I can't remember if it was last year, if it was 2016. The panel ended up being, I think it was 2016, the panel was all white men. And so there were people in the
digital comics one?
No, this is the Bold Voices of Contemporary Horror. Oh, okay. It's like horror directors. And so there were a couple people during the Q&A who were like, hey, I noticed this. And it became kind of contentious there too, but in a respectful way. I liked that. Their answer was basically like, we had a couple people drop off who were supposed to be on the panel who couldn't be here. But speaking of horror this year, there's a panel for the Purge television show.
All right.
Which I, and I think you, Angie, saw a commercial for in the middle of the credits for the first Purge.
Yeah, where there would have been like a end credit scene in a Marvel movie, the first end credit scene, there was instead a really long ad for the new TV show.
What do you think about that?
About the ad or about the
fact
purge?
That it's there?
it was a little odd, but like, I mean, ultimately that's what most end credit scenes are. Like they're just usually packaged better. Like, you know, when you watch like a, when you're watching a Marvel movie and they have the end credit scene, like usually at least one of them is essentially just an ad for the next one.
Yeah.
But they do, but because they show you a scene rather than just like a something that's cut together like an ad, it doesn't feel as like jarring.
Yeah, I'm not used to seeing the USA Network logo in the middle of in the middle of a Marvel scene. Like they don't put like the ABC TV logo, but that's because Marvel film does wants nothing to do with Marvel TV, which is always weird to me.
And that's not what it was for a while. Like the Netflix series were going to be a part of it. And
I think the Marvel TV people want to be thought of as part of the MCU.
Mm.
The MCU side of things has no interest.
Isn't it because the respective leadership don't get along?
Oh, I don't know. That sounds right.
Hmm. I don't know. That's what I
could see that being the case. Yes.
But I do remember like when the Marvel Cinematic Universe was being a thing, their whole pitch was like, everything's connected. Yeah. The shows are connected. Yeah. The movies are connected. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is like also like, you know, it's all part of the same universe. And like, right now, it's more of a, you can't technically disprove that we're all part of the same universe. Like, they don't do things that, like, directly contradict each other, but they mostly just stay very far out of each other's way.
Yeah. Like, on the Netflix shows, they will reference, like, the Battle of New York and that sort of thing. They'll reference, like, big hammers and giant green guys.
Weirdly,
and stuff like
they,
that.
Like, don't say the names of the heroes a lot. Yeah. Like, she'll like, sorry,
it's okay.
Something. Like I remember there's an episode of Jessica Jones where she referred to like, you know, I'm not a flag waver, and she was like talking about Captain America, and I was like, I mean, like if you're in that universe, wouldn't you just say Captain America? Sure. Yeah. I mean, I see why you don't want to, because you don't like, you know, that's, you reference like a bigger name and then everyone's like, is he gonna show up or is this a thing or whatever? But it is kind of distracting and odd.
Yeah.
There is a bold voice of contemporary horror this year. I don't recognize the names. It does seem like it's a good gender mix from what I'm guessing by the names. But it's moderated by Jenny Motto of Times. She's always fun moderator. Okay, other stuff on the schedule this year that I wrote down, I forgot I had written the stuff down. There's a 2001 A Space Odyssey 50th Anniversary panel.
Oh,
that sounds cool. That's on Thursday. I'm not going to be there on Thursday. There's a panel called You're Wrong, Leonard Maltin, which I'm guessing is just
People
telling Leonard Maltin he's wrong. There's, of course, Tyler, I can't believe you must be so sad you're going to miss the 1988 Greatest Geek Year Ever.
I was going to ask about that. obviously you cover like Hall H and Ballroom 20, like the big stuff. So does that mean that you don't get the opportunity to go to, you know, David was talking about the horror panel, and obviously there's like the, was it Girls Who Kick Ass or something like
Women
that?
Who Kick Ass.
Women Who Kick Ass is in Hall H. Okay. So I end up, I don't go to it so much as sit through it, because I'm trying to be at part of the panel or like there for the panel before and after. But I tend to watch it every year because it's like in the big room.
Okay.
It's always, I mean, I haven't been to Hall H in years, so I haven't seen one in years, but it's always a good conversation, it seems like.
They're usually fun. I mean, like, you know, to your point, like sometimes a lot of the panels that I end up enjoying are ones that I just accidentally stumble into, or like I'm sitting through the way for something else. Like I remember one year when I was still at Slashfilm, like the team was sitting through the Big Bang Theory panel because we're waiting for like the next thing, and none of them liked the show. Some of them actively hate it. I don't mind it, whatever. But like that panel was so fun just because like, you know, everyone was very charismatic and whatnot. And then on the flip side, sometimes there are panels that you love, like whatever it's going to be about. So you think it's gonna be good, and then it's awful.
Yeah.
Like I remember the year George R. R. Martin moderated the Game of Thrones panel. It was just the most awkward shit I've ever seen. It was horrible.
I was not there, thank God.
It's for the best.
I could see that. Like maybe just go back to writing. Don't talk.
Go back to writing. He doesn't seem to be writing.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's true.
I don't know.
I haven't read any of them. But have you gone to any of the? What is it, Geek Magazine, right, that presents?
Yeah, I went to one at WonderCon, not at Comic-Con, but it's the same deal.
Yeah. So every year there is a panel brought to you by Geek Magazine that looks back 30 years to the movie year that was. So, like, this year, obviously, they're going to be looking to 1988.
Die Hard.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit is a big one. Obviously, they're going to talk about The Last Temptation of Christ. I'm being sarcastic, of course. That's a real movie. By which I mean it's not a genre film.
Die Hard's great.
Yes. As is Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But,
it really is.
But that's the thing is, like, it's I get suckered into going every year because I'm excited to hear them talk about that particular year. And then they bring the most vapid commentary that to movies that I like. And it's like you could swap out these panels for anybody in the audience and it would be better. It is astonishing. And one thing that I'm kind of bummed about, because I didn't go to WonderCon this year, and I'm bummed that I won't get to go to the 1988 panel
to sit there
and
just get
angry, so angry as I do every year and wonder why did I do this to myself? And because there is a very specific brand of, you know, online or YouTube or just general geek commentary that just completely skims the surface. It might go one layer down, but it is just completely, I'm reluctant to say this, worthless. Just absolutely worthless.
Is it like relentlessly positive, like a, you know, like a Talking Dead type thing? Is it just, or is it people being like, did you know Die Hard is a Christmas movie? What? I bet that's shocking.
It is. It's partially that. Sometimes when like the word awesome gets said a lot, or sucks, you know, and it's all the, it, like you brought up the Die Hard Christmas thing. We all know it. We all have said it for many decades at this point.
For 30 years.
And yet some people think they're being very edgy very in front, you know, that they're ahead of everybody else. But yeah, so whatever the opinion is now, that's what they will do. Like I went to 2013, so they were talking about 1983, and they were talking about Return of the Jedi. Okay, all right. And yes, of course, the prequels have kind of made Return of the Jedi look better, but everyone said, like, yeah, Return of the Jedi, boy, what a disappointment. Like, what are you talking about? Everybody loved Return of the Jedi at the time, and you're not any older than me. And I loved Return of the Jedi because Jabba's Palace, and they're like, oh, Ewoks, can you imagine? It's like, yeah, kids loved the Ewoks at the time. We don't necessarily like them now, but now that everybody is older and we look back and realize that the Ewoks were just a very pandering type of thing, now we don't like it, but don't act like you were this hip 5-year-old who hated the Ewoks. You love the Ewoks like everybody else did. Ugh.
Do other people also hate this panel, or is it just maybe a part of Comic-Con that's not for you?
I think it's probably,
I think a lot of people
just
like it.
I think a lot of people like it, but again, in the same way that I will say that this panel is utterly worthless, I'll say that those people are wrong. They're wrong to like it, and they shouldn't go.
This but is I'm the glad spirit it's of positivity and community that you like to bring to San Diego Comic Con.
I'm not attending this year.
But to change the subject, actually, because I thought of something I wanted to ask about covering Comic Con, because we do the podcasts. Sometimes I'll do updates, you know, but our readership doesn't. Is probably already going to read Andy's site or whatever. But I have there's been a something that's come up in recent years with other people that's come up, like for me. I'll give an example because I'm not doing Hall H, but I like to go to the Shout Factory / Scream Factory panel every year, in which every year they announce a ton of shit. So in theory, it's a very news generating panel. But also, the second they announce it, they're tweeting. The second they announce it at the panel, the Shout Factory Twitter has announced it. So even if I'm just trying to, on Twitter, say like, hey, guess what? Shout Factory, they've already had their tweet locked and loaded. Like, it seems so difficult to cover Comic-Con because how do you get a scoop?
I mean, you're right. Like, that's a big... my brain just stopped working for a second.
Yeah, it's because the air conditioner came on. It seemed to happen at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I've been pumping gas in here. Is that weird? Sorry about that.
I do think that that's, like, a... it's one of the reasons why, like, you would think, you know, anything that comes out of Comic-Con is going to be, like, really big and do really well, like, in terms of traffic, and everyone's going to be, you know, like, all our readers are going to be really excited. But you're right. Like, the problem for a lot of it is that by the time you're able to even, like, load the CMS to, like, type in, like, oh, here's a thing that just happened, they've already tweeted out, people have already tweeted out, like, photos and video and whatnot, and it is one of the challenges. There are some things that are kind of, like, for example, Marvel, we were talking about Marvel earlier, and that's a good example where, like, they'll have footage that is actually exclusive to the panel, and, like, things like that are, you know, I'm like, well, I'm glad I'm here, because otherwise I wouldn't know about this, or I wouldn't really get a good sense of it or whatever. And, you know, there is a difference to, like, being there where you can, like, feel, like, what the energy is like on the ground versus, like, trying to piece it together from back home. But yeah, if Warner Brothers announces Man of Steel 2 or something, yeah, that's just going to be online. Especially Warner
Brothers, because, I remember, was it 2 years ago? It was 2016. Warner had the full Wonder Woman trailer online within 30 seconds of showing it at the panel, because I didn't go to the panel and I watched the Wonder Woman trailer on my phone at a bar.
Do you remember the year that they showed the Suicide Squad trailer, and then it wasn't supposed to go online, but it immediately went online, and then they, like, released it afterward or something like that? I think that's what happened.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think, because, like, unless you're, like, you have to be very, very strict about not getting that footage out there, and, like, Marvel has managed to get away with it better than others, but yeah, like, even when they're not trying to release the footage, a lot of that will just get out.
Yeah. Okay, we should wrap up, but another topic, I don't know how much we're going to get into this, but Chris Hardwick is usually a big person at Comic-Con, a big deal, and he will not be there this year. Any thoughts?
I'm not surprised. I mean, like, the first, like, once I saw that story come out, I was like, well, I guess Comic-Con is going to take a big blow.
Obviously, nothing affects Comic-Con. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They'll be fine.
I mean, Comic-Con will be fine. It'll move on. As someone who has been to Hall H so many times, like, was he good at his job? Yeah. Like, was he good at moderating panels? Yeah. He had one of those jobs where you don't think it's hard until you see other people try to do it, and they're always, like, much worse than him at it. So, like, sure, he's good. Is he so good that I'm like, oh, man, I'm so sad he's not going to be there. I'm going to miss him so much. What a loss for Comic-Con. No, he's not. Like, it's fine. Comic-Con will be fine. I look forward to whoever they get on to do. I mean, he's, like, yes, he's good at his job. He's not the only person that can do the job or the only person who can do it well. I look forward to finding out who else is going to be there instead.
Me too. Apparently, Yvette Nicole Brown is doing
exactly. Like,
one of the panels that he was supposed to do. So that sounds great. I like her. Yeah, I've never been a big fan, so I'm not gonna miss the presence. But I don't know. I guess I bring it up because as much as we mostly like Comic-Con, we've mostly said positive things, except for this geek panel and the security.
Get it out of there. No, keep it. I need something to fight against.
They have been, unlike other comic book conventions that are cosplay heavy, Comic-Con has sometimes been slow to react to, like, you know, to posting sort of like rules of conduct, like codes of conduct. Because, people who cosplay, women who cosplay especially, it's often unpleasant for them. I know from, first-hand experience, because I'm not that, but from friends' experiences. I don't know. Comic-Con is so popular that we joke about it, you know, only 6%, like, they can do whatever they want, but will there ever be a backlash about Comic-Con not handling something, or is it too big to take down in that way?
I think people will continue going, and as much as I will fight against the idea of the mom's basement thing, I will say that it is a group that when it comes to, not everyone, of course, but, like, you will find some level of social awkwardness from time to time. Like, There have been times when I like have been standing in line and I've overheard conversations that made me want to get out of line and go to bed. Because it's so awkward. Like sometimes between strangers, sometimes between friends. And we all have those moments, but like
I remember the time a guy stepped on the guy in the face with a pencil.
Yeah, that was
still one of my
really
things
awkward.
That happened at Comic-Con. I was in the room.
Yeah. Love that positivity.
Yeah,
but yeah, so it's so I do think that there's people who maybe when faced with certain things, they don't necessarily know how to react, and they might think that oh, okay, well, so and so is dressing this way, so they must want some level of attention, which might be true, again, some level of attention, but not, but they don't know, but this person doesn't necessarily know how far to go or in complimenting or wanting a photo or something like that. So
well, that's a good rule for people who need to know. Always ask first before taking a photo of someone in cosplay. That's basic, basic conduct.
I always I always ask very apologetically when I need to take a photo of a Riddler.
Which you need to.
Which I need to. Yeah. You know, who's going to cover Riddler watch while I'm gone this year, David? I assume you're going to pick up the baton.
Nope. I've never once taken a picture of a cosplayer. Because I think I just wanted to exist in my mind. I kind of want Comic-Con to be this like this Brigadoon that just appears. I was like joking with my wife just last night. She was like, because she's never been to Canada, and she was like, "Are you going to Toronto?" And I've never been. I'm bummed you're going without me. And I was like, "Well, I'm not really going to Toronto. I'm going to a film festival. Like I've been to San Diego over a dozen times in my life.
Yeah,
I would say I've been to San Diego once.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's like going
Comic-Con.
To an airport.
Little bit. I mean, like I have been there when it's not Comic-Con, and it's just like, oh, it's just a completely different city.
Yeah, one time ever I've been to San Diego without Comic-Con.
Yeah. And also when you're at Comic-Con, you're probably only exploring the area that's like right around the convention center too. San Diego's big. There's a lot of other stuff to do there, and you don't get to experience any of that. And then of course, even when you're, you know, even when you go to like a restaurant that exists all the time or whatever, everyone's like dressed up in like their like geeky t-shirts. They have like the geeky decorations up. So you're not getting like the experience of like what this place is usually like.
Even the menu's different. The menu has, you know, Thor on it or whatever. But yeah, if someone asked me, like, if someone was like, oh, you've been to San Diego a dozen times, what's there to do there? I'd be like,
go to the convention center.
Might I recommend this Geek Magazine panel? Pretty good.
Oh yeah. One time I was, they got the Batmobiles out on the lawn.
Yeah. I have to assume they're there all the time. Check out the pirate ship in the bay.
Well, that is there all the time though.
Is that actually true?
It's not always a pirate ship, but that ship is famous. I forget what it's called.
But that's what I mean. There's like always things like the restaurants and bars in the convention center are always there. They're just completely different when it's not Comic-Con.
I know, but I do love, I kind of respect that on Friday and Saturday nights, some of the San Diego douchebag crowd still comes out to go to their bars. Because I feel like the gas lamp is really fun during Comic-Con. It's not the type of part of town that I would likely hang out in very much. Do you know what I mean? I don't like go, I don't go to the like the Third Street Promenade for nightlife. Do you know what I mean?
That's true.
I do find it funny that the regular bar and club douche crowd still powers through.
You have to admire their commitment.
Yeah, exactly.
On the one hand, you know, it, like as someone who's like there for Comic-Con and visiting it, like sure they can be obnoxious. On the other hand, like good for them. It's their city. Yeah, we're the invading forces. Like they're just like, no, we're gonna carry on and just live our lives and fuck these nerds. And yeah, okay, sure, that's your right.
Yeah, exactly.
You should call them townies.
Last thing I wanted to mention: there's a Deadpool 2 panel. I looked up, like, what's in the Marvel slot? And it's a panel for a movie that already came out.
I kind of love that, actually. I wish they would do that more often.
I mean, I guess it's fun. But
they're promoting the home video release?
I guess.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, who other than people like us buy Blu-rays anymore?
Well, but the movie didn't come out that long ago. Like, I don't think it's out on Blu-ray yet, or it won't be. For probably like 2 or 3 more months.
I don't know. The stuff turns around. The window is closing all the time. But they're doing
a
panel.
When did it come out? It came out in May, right?
like April or May, I think.
April or May. Okay, so
I guess it was.
So it'll probably be out in like what, like a month,
yeah.
2 months?
Yeah, maybe.
Plus,
yeah.
They're also doing, so in addition to having a panel, they're also doing a screening of the like uncut version which okay. I'm sure will be on the Blu-ray, and I'm sure that's.
Okay, so yeah, that's, I guess that's what they're promoting, but. Yeah, no, I like the idea. I wish they would do that more often, where they bring people back. I mean, obviously, if the movie is a big bomb, then that's just going to be a sad thing. But something that's really popular, and having people come out and just tell stories about behind the scenes that people have already seen, I think would be fun.
Well, that's kind of, for years until they changed the, when it aired, what the Game of Thrones panel was. Mm. Because the Game of Thrones panel would always be, for like the first like five seasons, was always right after the season had ended. And so they didn't really have anything to talk about with the new season that they were like maybe just filming, or maybe hadn't even started filming yet. And it would be just like a victory lap where they talk about the season yeah. that just aired.
And I think that's kind of neat, because
it's great for fans.
Yeah, like you can speak in spoilers. Everything's fine. Like if they were to talk about like Deadpool 2, they could talk about certain characters that they were hiding before the film came out, and then now you can talk about it.
I like the idea of it, but I also get why, if you're a studio, you're just like, well, I'm not getting any more money out of these people now. Like, you know, why would I fly in all these movie stars from all around the world to like go to this thing so that people can not shell out again for a product they already bought?
But maybe it'll be a fun panel. If I don't know, I'm not going on. I never saw a Deadpool movie.
I mean, it's Deadpool. I'm sure it'll be wacky and hilarious.
Irreverent, right?
Cheeky.
Fourth wall
breaking.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
Pushing the envelope. You're really going to push the envelope.
To be clear, it's not like I'm even like, I hate Deadpool. Just thinking about all of this, I'm like, I'm tired.
Well, that maybe is a good, Angie's tired. So maybe it's a good time to wrap
up. Now you're making me sound like a baby that needs to take a nap. No, I'm going to go all night. Come on, ask me another question.
Angie's got to put a little nightcap on and get to bed.
I hate you.
But not before
snuff out the candles and all that sort of thing.
But then first she's got to like pull in the laundry from the line outside her tenement building and yell, open the window and yell at the neighbors to keep it down. Shut up. Why don't you?
What am I, Tyler?
All right. Great ending point. You can find us at battleshipretention.com. That's where there's, let's see, this week there's reviews of Skyscraper. There's reviews of, what did I, you had said 8th grade.
Yeah.
Don't Worry, He Won't Get Far on Foot. We got some home video reviews and Alex's Criterion Prediction column. We've got West's Musical Notation podcast.
About the Simpsons this week.
Music from the Simpsons was great. Yeah, so we had a busy week of Battleship Retention. All kinds of fun stuff to find there. You can email us at david@battleshipretention.com or tyler@battleshipretention.com. You can follow me, David, on Twitter at Davey Pretension. You can follow Tyler on Twitter at Tyler Pretension. Tyler, real quick, you have another podcast and website. It's called morethanonelesson.com.
Right. Yes.
What can people find there?
Let's see. This week we have an episode about Avengers Infinity War, which the conversation took an odd turn, by which I mean, like, we wound up focusing on one particular theme, or rather one particular complaint that people have about the film, and talk about it for a while. It was very, very interesting.
Angie, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find my writing at mashable.com, and you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN.
Thank you so much for finally being on the podcast. I had to wait for you to make your first ever journey out to... Yeah,
you had to wait for me to move from New York to LA so that you could immediately come
to make
here
the
and...
Trek. Yeah. Like Lois, Lewis and Clark, or like Lois and Clark,
to fight off dysentery. on your way out.
You didn't get downer partied, which is great.
Yeah,
you don't know. I didn't tell you about the
about the trip. That's true. I hope you give a chance to our humble city.
Yeah,
out here. I know. we're no New York. We're not, you know, the city that never sleeps. We don't have the Great White Way.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, Angie.
And thanks for having me on.
Thank you at home for listening.
We'll get you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.